I really struggled to find a guideline that did not recommend limiting or avoiding saturated fats. The Australian Heart Foundation guidelines, the Heart Association guidelines, the Australian Dietary Guidelines, the RACGP and Diabetes Australia Diabetes Guidelines, the American Heart Association Guidelines, the NICE Cardiovascular Disease Guidelines, the World Health Organization Healthy Diet Guidelines, the World Heart Foundation Guidelines, and the list goes on and on. It seems that every single evidence-based guideline has made a statement on limiting fat intake and on avoiding saturated fats. But are these statements evidence-based? A study from The Lancet called the Pure Study has resurfaced this controversy. Let's take a look. Hello and welcome to the Evidence-Based Medicine Podcast, where each week we delve into a landmark clinical study that has shaped medicine. This week, we'll look at the evidence for the recommendation to eat a low-fat diet and avoid saturated fats. Saturated fats are in eggs, animal meats, and milk products like milk, cream, cheese, and butter. The recommendation to avoid saturated fats is so well known and so widely adopted that you'd think there was pretty solid evidence to back it up. Well, you might be surprised. The recommendation to avoid fats and avoid saturating fats actually came from pretty weak evidence from ecological studies. This is where you look at different populations, see what they eat, and count their heart attacks. If a population is having more heart attacks, see if you can blame it on their diet. The most famous of these studies was the 7-country study by Ansel Keys. Keys showed that the countries which ate the most fat and saturated fat had the most heart attacks. Fascinatingly, he actually collected data from 21 countries, but only reported on the 7. When a guy called Jacob Yerushalmi analyzed the data from all 21 countries, the association was no longer there. But it was too late. The cat was out of the bag, so to speak. Fats were deemed bad, and saturated fats, worse. For a more in-depth discussion of the history of fats and diet and guidelines, there's a book called Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taubes. And it goes into the history in a lot more detail, and it seems accurate from the sections that I've referenced myself. If you can handle his sort of passive-aggressive and salesman-y tone, then give it a read. The second piece of evidence, which was used to launch these saturated fat recommendations a few decades ago, is that eating foods high in saturated fats increases cholesterol. And this seems true when you look at the evidence. The problem is, does it matter? See, the reason we care about cholesterol is because of its link to cardiovascular disease. But there are plenty of drugs that lower cholesterol that have no impact on cardiovascular disease. So the fact that something lowers cholesterol doesn't always mean it's good for us. Not only that, but treatments like the Mediterranean diet reduces cardiovascular disease without having any impact on cholesterol levels. So it's best we use evidence that assesses the impact of low-fat diets and low-saturated fat diets directly on cardiovascular disease, rather than on things like cholesterol, which are called surrogate markers. Now, since this 7-countries trial, studies that have tried to back up the claim that saturated fats are bad have failed to come through with the goods. The next level of evidence, up from ecological studies, are cohort studies. This is where you take a population, ask them how much fat they eat, among other things, and then follow them up to see how many got cardiovascular disease and whether it was associated with their diet. A recent review of all the studies that use this approach was published in the BMJ in 2015, and all the references will be in the show notes. You can find that at www.ebmpodcast.com. They found that there was no association between saturated fats and death, heart attacks, strokes, or diabetes. Absolutely nothing. Okay, so the highest level of evidence are randomized controlled trials, where you actually randomize a group of people to either reduce their fat or their saturated fat intake, or keep it the same. By far, the biggest of these studies was the Women's Health Initiative. This is a complicated trial that probably needs its own episode, but in one of the arms of the trial, 50,000 women were randomized into 2 groups. The first group simply continued their usual diet, and the second group got a very intensive program of dietitians and education to reduce their total fat and their saturated fat intake. They followed them up for 8 years and found absolutely no difference in cardiovascular disease whether they continued their usual diet or reduced their fat and saturated fat. So now let's get to the PURE study. It's the latest study to stab this saturated fat theory in the back. It is a huge prospective cohort study and probably the highest quality one we have to date. They recruited 156,424 people and got them to complete surveys at the start of the study and every 3 years after that. They were interested in things like smoking, physical activity, medications, socioeconomic things like education and income, and a full medical history. Now, the brilliance of the PURE study is the breadth of patients they were able to recruit, and this makes this study unlike any other study in the field. They recruited people from 18 countries, getting a good mix of third world and first world countries. They recruited from 3 high income countries, like Canada and Sweden, 11 middle income countries, like Brazil, China, Poland, and South Africa, and 4 low income countries, like India and Pakistan. And they based this on the World Bank classification. Can you imagine what a nightmare it would be to follow people up in all these countries over like 10 years? They also tried to get the most accurate representation of what each of these people were eating. They did this by making the people fill out food questionnaires on their diet and like what sorts of foods they were eating. Every country had its own questionnaire that was specific to that country, but they were all standardized. Now, there is good evidence that food questionnaires are not very accurate in depicting what someone is actually eating. Imagine if I asked you what sort of foods you eat. How different would your answer be if you were in a good mood compared to if you were in a bad mood? Your diet might not be different, but you might feel guilty and self-loathing and inflate all the bad things you eat. If you've just gone out of gym and you're feeling amazing, you might inflate all the fruits and vegetables you eat. And then there's the problem of recall. Who can remember how many times they added salt to their food? And how are you to know how much butter or oil was in that Eggs Benedict you ordered from that restaurant? This is one of the big limitations of any diet study, be it a cohort or even a randomized controlled trial. So, in order to verify the accuracy of the answers to these questions, they got a sample of about 250 people from each country to keep a 24-hour food diary every now and then. That way, they could compare how well matched their actual food intake was to what they had written on their food questionnaire. And they could try and adjust for this. So for example, if someone from the sample of people who actually did the 24-hour food diary showed that they ate 6 pieces of bread per day, but had reported in the questionnaire that they ate 2, they could try and adjust for this. Question: why didn't they just do regular 24-hour food diaries on everyone? Perhaps it would be too hard of a mission to get that level of data from everyone, or too expensive to ensure all 150,000 are doing their food diaries regularly. So, not ideal, but this seems to be what all the big diet cohort studies are doing these days. By the way, this PURE study is still ongoing. They're following these guys continuously and publishing studies about them left, right, and center. This specific study from the PURE data that we're talking about today was titled Associations of Fats and Carbohydrate Intake with Cardiovascular Disease and Mortality in 18 Countries from 5 Continents, a prospective cohort study. It was published in The Lancet in August 2017. Now, out of the 156,000 people in the PURE cohort, only 135,000 could be included in this study, because they didn't have the food questionnaires from the others. They also excluded people who had a history of cardiovascular disease. The average follow-up was for 7.5 years, and the aim of the study was to see if they could make any associations between diet and cardiovascular disease. They followed each patient up every single year to see if they'd had a heart attack or a stroke or any other cardiovascular outcome. Now, they calculated the proportion of carbohydrates, fats, and protein in everyone's diet. They did this by converting the foods they ate into nutrients. And then they split up the population into quintiles for each of these macronutrients. So for example, with saturated fat intake, they split the 135,000 people up into 5 groups based on the proportion of saturated fats they were eating. The top 20% who ate the most saturated fats were put in the highest quintile, and the 20% who ate the least amount of saturated fat were put in the lowest quintile, and so on and so forth. They did this for all the macronutrients, And then for each quintile, they check to see how many died, how many got strokes, heart attacks, and so on. So what did they find? Well, firstly, if you're like me and you love looking at data, I highly recommend skimming through the results of this trial because it's really the first large, high-quality cohort study across multiple different countries with different socioeconomic status. They have obtained a great amount of interesting information like smoking status across the different countries, rates of cardiovascular disease per level of income category, and the actual dietary contents of the different income-tiered countries. It's fascinating. For the sake of not barraging you with information, I'll limit this discussion to the impact of diet on cardiovascular disease. Okay, so let's start with saturated fats. You may want to put that skinny flat white down and take a seat for this one because you could be in for a bit of a shock. Firstly, the recommendation from all the guidelines is that we eat less than 6 to 10% of our total energy intake from saturated fat. It differs slightly depending on the guideline. The lowest quintile of saturated fat consumers in this study were eating 2.8% of their total energy intake from saturated fat, so they were well and truly within all the guidelines. Now brace yourself, they were the most likely group to die. They were also the most likely group to develop a stroke, and while it wasn't statistically significant, they seemed to be at the greatest risk of all the other cardiovascular outcomes. There was no difference between any of the other quintiles, though. Only this lowest quintile of saturated fat consumers were at a higher risk. So it didn't matter if you were getting 13.2% of your total energy from saturated fat, or 9.5%, or 7.1%, or 4.9%. There was no difference in death or cardiovascular disease. But if you were eating a really low amount, 2.8%, then your risk significantly increased. All-cause mortality was 7.2% in the lowest saturated fat eaters, and this went down to around 4.5% as you increase the amount of saturated fat in your diet. Let's keep going. What about total fat intake? Again, the lower your fat intake, the more likely you are to die or develop a stroke. Turning to carbohydrates now, and this is where things get interesting. When I was in primary school, there was a national program to teach kids about the food pyramid. On the bottom of this food pyramid, the foods we should be eating the most were all carbohydrate foods, breads, cereals, and pasta. Well, what does the Pure study have to say about that? Well, as your intake of carbohydrates increased, your risk of death and cardiovascular disease also increased. And if you look at the graph, it really looks like it's in a linear fashion. So in the lowest eaters of carbohydrates, 4.1% died during the follow-up period. But among those who ate the most carbohydrates, 7.2% of them died. And this again is why we should never make decisions based on surrogate markers, because the evidence suggests that diets high in carbohydrates lower your bad cholesterol levels. Well, that's great, but it increases your chance of dying. I won't go into proteins and the other fats, except to say that animal protein intake was associated with lower rates of mortality. Now, a few things I would like to discuss. Firstly, why do we insist on making recommendations when we don't have sound evidence to support these recommendations? Especially when the recommendations we're making involve radical changes in lifestyle. For example, most dietary guidelines up until recently used to strongly recommend that parents should avoid giving their babies any foods that are allergenic. The American Academy of Pediatrics, for example, told all mothers not to eat peanuts during pregnancy, while breastfeeding, and not to give them to their child until they reached 3 years of age. Then the LEAP trial came along in 2015 and showed that actually, the earlier you give peanut products to babies, the less likely they are to develop allergies. Can you imagine how many allergies you must have caused with those recommendations? It's nuts. See what I did there? The difference is that the pediatric nutritional guidelines have been quick to adjust their recommendations after the LEAP trial has come out. I'll spend a whole episode talking about the LEAP trial at some point. Actually, let's do it next week. Yeah! But the total fat and saturated fat recommendations don't seem to show any signs of slowing down despite an increasing body of evidence that we were probably wrong. And you might say, well, we're not really harming patients by telling them to eat less fat and saturated fat. After all, it doesn't seem to make cardiovascular disease worse when eating less fat. And yes, we might not be creating more cardiovascular disease with these recommendations, except maybe those who have very little saturated fat, as shown in this Pure study. But as someone who spent 6 years suffering through fat-free milk and basically only eating chicken breasts, I can tell you it is a big deal. When I learned in med school about the harms of saturated fats, I radically altered my diet. It wasn't until I got into the evidence that I started to eat foods that I enjoyed. So I can tell you, these recommendations have a significant impact on quality of life. Secondly, this isn't the perfect evidence. Nothing beats a randomized controlled trial in terms of telling us whether something is causative. But it's almost impossible to do a good quality randomized controlled trial on diet. Firstly, blinding is impossible. Secondly, if I told you to stop eating saturated fats, or to start eating saturated fats, would you be able to do that for 5 years? It's very tricky. Now, we do have some randomized controlled trials, again with all the limitations I mentioned, and the biggest one, which contributed to 60% of the power for the Cochrane review on this, was from the Women's Health Initiative, which could not find any benefits from a diet low in saturated fats. I also feel that if there was something bad about saturated fats, we should be able to see it in observational studies. When you look at cohort studies of smoking, there was like 8 to 10 times higher rates of lung cancer in those who smoked. It was a very robust association. But here, cohort studies just don't seem to find an association. Thirdly, it's important to note that they only did this food questionnaire at the very start of the study and then never repeated them again. Now, it could be that in 7.5 years, some of them had drastically changed their diet from when they filled out their questionnaires at the start. But if this is the case, this would only dilute the groups and so would weaken the associations. So in this regard, these results could well be an underestimate of the harms from low-fat and high-carbohydrate diets. Fourthly, if you argue that people who are health-conscious might exercise more, smoke less, and choose their diets carefully, and this could skew the results, if anything, healthy people are eating less fat and less saturated fat, because that's what society has been telling them to do. So if the people in the low-fat group are exercising more, this would make the results look even more impressive. Last point, the first thing that came to my mind when I was reading the study was, well, perhaps the people who can't afford meats and other high-fat content foods are more likely to die not because they're eating less fat, but because they don't have money to pay for healthcare, etc. So I was put at ease when I found that the researchers had done additional analyses where they adjusted for socioeconomic status and found the exact same results. Alrighty, so what's the bottom line? Well, I must admit, I actually rarely agree with the authors' conclusions on their own studies. I prefer to look at the results myself and make my own conclusions. But this time, I'm going to quote the conclusion directly to give our bottom line. Global dietary guidelines should be reconsidered in light of the consistency of findings from the present study, with the conclusions from meta-analyses of other observational studies, and the results of recent randomized controlled trials. So there it is. That's it from me. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. I would greatly appreciate your feedback. When I started this podcast, for example, I made a promise to myself that I would never give my opinions on anything, just display the evidence in an unbiased way and let the listeners reach their own conclusions. But I'm finding my opinion keeps coming out. I'd love some guidance from you, whether you like this or you don't like this, or if there's anything else you can think of that might improve the show. Email me or leave a comment on the website, www.ebmpodcast.com. Please subscribe to this podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you know anyone who would like this podcast, then let them know. All the show notes and references are at www.ebmpodcast.com. Subscribe to Dr. Dan on YouTube, where I make one-minute evidence-based videos. Okay, next week we'll delve into the LEAP trial. And with that, hang on. No, we won't delve. We will leap into the LEAP trial. And with that, look at all the evidence on dietary methods to reduce the risk of peanut allergies in kids. That's next week. I'm Daniel Aronoff. I'll talk to you then.